Murfreesboro.
This is FM 100.5, 101.9, AM 1450, and WGNSradio.com. Rutherford County's place to talk.
We interrupt this program to bring you the following message. What if everything you've been told about money was a lie? It's time for the truth. Welcome to Financial Coaching Radio, where cookie-cutter financial advice just doesn't cut it. With your host, certified financial planner, Jason Qualls. He's giving it to you straight and pulling back the curtains on the financial advice industry. No hidden agenda and no one-size-fits-all baby steps. Only unbiased, objective help for your entire financial life. Tackling your money questions at 893-1450. And now, here's the host of Financial Coaching Radio, commission-free, certified financial planner, Jason Qualls.
What is up? Welcome to the show, giving you the truth about personal finance. This is Financial Coaching Radio, and I'm your host, Jason Qualls, certified financial planner, one of the only independent commission-free financial advisors in Rutherford County. For all about me, check out Jason Qualls, CFP.com. That's J-A-S-O-N-Q-U-A-L-L-S, CFP.com. Questions, comments, same old place as usual. Click email the show at financialcoachingradio.com. You can also find the social media links there as well. Hit me up. We'll get those questions answered. This show, we talk about more than just the basics. Sometimes it's a little more complex. Sometimes it is very simple. But we're talking about real deal financial planning topics that me and my colleagues actually face with real life clients every day. This is not just the basics of get out of debt and get on a budget. We assume on this show that you actually know those things. Now, you may not be doing them. And we'll still talk about those topics from time to time. How do you improve upon your methods for watching what you spend and saving money? But we assume that, you know, you already realize, hey, you got to live on less than you make. Yeah, that's kind of a no-brainer, right? You can't have more going out than coming in and then scratch your head and wonder what the hell's going on. It doesn't make any sense, right? So we assume you know that, and we assume that, you know, you how to get that done, you do it through budgeting of some sort. Whether it be pay yourself first, or you kind of zero-based budget and write it all out, or do it through an app on your phone. It doesn't really matter how you get it done, as long as you get it done. And then beyond that, you know, you have financial assets to protect. You have your income to protect. Let's talk about risk management, or we talk about risk management from time to time. Then also how to make sure those assets go to the right place when you pass away, or if you're incapacitated and you can't make decisions for yourself. That would be estate planning. And then in the middle, of course, is minimizing taxes, tax planning strategies, investments, asset allocation, college planning, all of that stuff that's in the middle. So from start to finish, we're covering topics on this show that no one else is going to talk about. All right, first up, let's talk about what the Federal Reserve is doing. The Federal Reserve is now buying exchange-traded funds. If you're not familiar with what an ETF is, that's the acronym for exchange-traded fund. It's basically a mutual fund that trades like a stock. And if that makes sense, you know, just think of how stocks are bought and sold. You know, the market opens at 8:30, closes at 3 o'clock, our time. You know, obviously, central time for us. And in between, there's after-hours trading as well, but let's just keep it very simple. From 8 a.m. to 3 p.m. or 8:30 a.m. to 3 o'clock, 3 p.m., you can make a stock trade, right? You can buy shares of Facebook. You can buy shares of GE. You can buy Ford. You can buy Apple, whatever. And you can buy them every second of throughout that day, throughout the trading day. Well, a regular mutual fund doesn't trade that way. You really can't buy and sell it throughout the day because it's not priced. It's only priced at one time during the day. The 3 p.m. is when regular mutual funds are priced. So it doesn't matter if you put in 10 different sell orders or 10 different buy orders for a regular mutual fund, you don't know what you're paying for it until the end of the day. Now, an ETF, you can buy and sell throughout the day just like a stock. But again, it's a mutual fund that trades like a stock. And now the Federal Reserve is buying them. And they're not buying stock mutual funds or ETFs, excuse me. They're actually buying bond ETFs. And I think they're going to do about $750 billion. $750 billion. And I think this is the first time the Federal Reserve has ever bought ETFs. The Fed has bought and sold trillions of U.S. treasuries and other types of debt over the years, but I don't think they've ever bought an ETF. So why are they doing this? Let's see if we can figure it out. We got Kiplinger actually telling us about this information. As part of the stimulus effort to counteract, what are they counteracting? I guess the pandemic stuff. To counteract the effects of the lockdowns, the Treasury gave the Federal Reserve $75 billion, which the Fed will in turn leverage 10 to 1 to buy $750 billion in corporate debt. So they're basically going to borrow even more money and use that $75 billion to get up to $750 billion, and I think that's all going into the market as corporate bond exchange traded ETFs, for the most part. Is it a big deal? Who knows? The Fed has its own way of doing things, and I think they've been successful at this point of controlling the money supply and limiting inflation. I have no complaints. You know, they tried for many, many years to get inflation back to to us, it's not that impactful, but to them, it was important. 2% inflation rate, that's what they wanted. And it took some time for them to get there. They tried this, they tried that, and they finally got there. Obviously, they're scared of all of the stuff that's going on, demand being down. Well, I don't know if demand is down, but the places that we would normally patronize, they're closed. Or we're not going out to patronize them because we're home, you know, because of the COVID-19. So demand is down in a sense. But there's a lot of money in the world. We have the PPP stuff. We have the stimulus checks from the government. Now, all that's not lights out individually, life-changing money, but it's money that wasn't planned on being there before. So they got to do some things to kind of counteract some of that. This way, I would think I would try to explain it to a layperson. In critical ways, this is really a major policy shift for the Federal Reserve. It makes a major weakness in the bond ETF space even more dangerous. The answer is pretty simple of why they're doing it. The Fed essentially has the same issue that other passive indexers do. They're looking to get exposure to the corporate bond market as a whole, but not necessarily any single company. Aha! So they need exposure to corporate bonds, but they don't want to go out and buy Ford, Facebook, some of their issuing bonds. They say, look, we believe this is the space we need to be in for whatever reason. Maybe we'll learn in just a second. And a broad-based corporate bond exchange-traded fund gets them there. The Fed isn't a bond manager, nor does it have the interest or inclination to research the creditworthiness of individual borrowers. Now, they could hire someone. Now, they could hire someone to do this, but they're like, hey, we don't really need to. So index funds, what does an index fund do for you? It gets you exposure to that area all across it. You know, you're not trying to single out this or that. So if I buy a U.S. stock ETF index fund, I'm getting exposure to U.S. stocks. If I buy a government bond ETF, I'm getting exposure to government bonds. If I buy a real estate ETF, I'm getting you get the idea. There is a political element. The Fed needs to maintain its image of neutrality and can't be seen as favoring individual companies. That was the first thing that popped in my head when they said they want exposure to corporate bonds through ETFs, but they don't want to pick single companies. The last thing the Fed chair needs is to face a congressional firing squad or his decision or not to buy the bonds of a controversial or politically incorrect company. Buying passive bond ETFs actually separates the Fed from this decision. Is this a bad decision? There are ways to improve liquidity in the bond market. That's what they're trying to do. During the March rout, the credit market seized up, liquidity disappeared, and bond prices dropped like a rock. But, well, did that really happen? I haven't checked it in the last 2-3 weeks, but when the crap hit the fan in March, bonds held up okay. I think they went negative for a bit. You know, did they fall? Of course, but that didn't go like terrible like stocks did. By jumping into corporate bonds, the Fed is looking to keep the market orderly and functioning. That sounds great, but here is the problem. By purchasing bond ETFs rather than bonds themselves, the Fed actually makes an existing problem worse. Bond ETFs create a false sense of liquidity. The ETFs themselves are extremely liquid and can even trade on the stock exchange, but the bonds they own are not. Liquidity in the ETF is not the same as the liquidity of the underlying bond. I'm sure they've considered this, right? They're going to be buying $750 billion. So how are they going to unwind this when it happens? So doing it for liquidity, doing it for general exposure, don't want to see favoritism. Doing liquidity in the markets because, you know, certainly as the gentleman for Kiplinger referenced there. So you think about it, if a corporate bond ETF has 100, it probably has way more than this, but if it has 100 different individual bonds in it, in essence, then when you buy that ETF, you're essentially buying all 100 of those. So when you sell that ETF, you're essentially selling all 100 of those. So someone's got to go, you know, down the line and make that the ultimate the liquidation of everything. And just you can buy and sell ETFs all you want as far as what it allows you to do as far as trading them. But underlying, underneath the hood may not be quite as liquid as you need. So it's something to think about when you're keeping up with the Fed, how this is affecting our economic policy. All right, this is Financial Coaching Radio. I'm Jason Qualls, Certified Financial Planner. After the break, we'll be talking estate planning with John Baker, talking about some things you need to know about updating your documents, when is the best time to do that. That and much more is on the way. Keep it locked in right here on Financial Coaching Radio. When it rains. Buying a house is stressful, and so is shopping for a mortgage. Take my advice and get a second opinion on the mortgage for your new home or your refinance. Not all banks and mortgage companies are created equal. Trust me on this. Call my friend Marshall Sparkman with Franklin Synergy Bank at 615-439-0885. Great team, great process, and the best rates. Marshall Sparkman with Franklin Synergy Bank at 615-439-0885.
Listen up. When is the last time you talked with an independent, objective, certified financial planner? Do yourself a favor and get a second opinion on your investments and financial plan. Call me, Jason Qualls, the only certified financial planner today at 878-2134 or go to jasonquallscfp.com.
We have many great insurance agents in Rutherford County. The trouble is, most of them really don't work for you and me. That's why I only recommend the independent agents of Middle Tennessee Insurance Group. They've helped many of my clients get the home and auto insurance coverages they need while also saving them hundreds, if not thousands of dollars. See if you're wasting money on home and auto insurance today by calling Middle Tennessee Insurance Group at 898-0053. That's 898-0053.
Welcome back to the show. Joining in now is John Baker, estate planning attorney. BakerCounsel.com is his address. We'll be talking exactly that, estate planning. John, any updates with the COVID-19 stuff? I know the last time you were on, one of the last times it was about you could sign your estate planning documents remotely or have them notarized remotely. And that was a big, big change to how things have been done in the past. So any updates there, any new developments in the nuances of signing legal documents?
No, I think that, yeah, that was kind of a hot topic early on, and then I think most states made some accommodations for that, including Tennessee. And so I think that's kind of stabilized as we've gotten a better grip on how to do that. What we've done in my office is we have mostly still done in-office signings, but we've done the social distancing and kept things, for example, the witnesses are probably about 10 or 15 feet from the people signing. I'm usually kind of in the middle so I can make sure they're signing in the right spots and things like that. So we've tried to do the social distancing. We don't have them coming all the way into our conference room. We kind of keep them by the front door. I've even heard some lawyers are actually doing it, in the parking lot or outdoors.
But if someone couldn't get to the office, there's an electronic way to sign.
But that's right. And then
be witnessed.
That's right. And some assisted living and nursing homes have been providing notaries or witnesses in their facility. So, you know, if I'm the lawyer, I can counsel or talk, through video or over the phone. And then the actual witnesses and notary are staff in the nursing home or in the assisted living. So, I think people have worked around that pretty good. And so, yeah, so I'd say that's all running somewhat smoothly now.
Well, the biggest mishaps after you've actually created an estate plan is having basic documents, wills, powers of attorney, maybe even involves a trust, depending on your situation. But one of the biggest mistakes people make is the failure to update. And there's an article here, 12 times you should update your will. And some of these, I have to say, were kind of had me thinking that they weren't the normal stuff. Obviously, the first one is, you're having a child, probably a good idea to update your estate plan.
That's a good one.
What about you're thinking about, this one struck me, you're thinking about a divorce. Why, if I'm thinking about a divorce, why would I update my estate plan? I'm not divorced yet.
Yeah, that's what
is that a common one in the
estate? Well, that's a good point, though. We kind of loosely tell folks, you know, if they're divorced and they haven't updated their will, to update it. But yeah, you might also want to update your will if you're pending divorce, because if you die during the divorce, and I've had cases where this has happened, your current spouse, who was to be your soon ex-spouse, will now be your spouse for purposes of inheritance.
So you don't have to wait till it's the final.
That's right. And so you may want to to deal with that. And I think that probably comes up, because at that point, the person probably has a divorce lawyer. And so they may be talking to their divorce lawyer about that, and perhaps the divorce lawyer puts a temporary will in place or something like that.
So depending on how long you're married, you know, the longer you're married, the more your spouse is entitled to of your assets. You can't really disinherit a spouse. Was it 30% if you're married long enough they have to be able to get or something like that?
Well, the percentage varies somewhat, but yes, there's a certain amount up to 40% of an estate that's where all mine was going.
So let's say I've been married long enough, and that minimum 30-40% or whatever that she has to be entitled to if I die. What if I die and the between the filing of the divorce and the final date, is she still entitled to that minimum?
Short answer is yes, and I've had that come up more than once.
So that's what I was thinking. You can update all you want, but she's still entitled to it. She's got to come back and get it.
Still may have an election, but it still would probably be a good idea to update it if that's not what you want.
If your child gets married, maybe that's a good time to update your will. And I guess this would be, do you like the in-law? The son-in-law, the daughter-in-law. If you don't, you maybe want to rethink your estate.
Right, and we get that question from time to time. Generally with estate planning, most families I see, the parents, you know, they tend to keep the legal inheritance structure within their family bloodline. You know, it's from parent to child to grandchild to great-grandchild. You know, there's not a lot of deviation out to the spouses. But occasionally there is, and certainly in longer marriages where the children have been married a long time, you'll see that probably more common than in a younger couple, a younger child who may be in their 20s and got married. I don't see a lot of those parents including the new spouse in the plan at that point. But yeah, that's something to think about.
Another one that struck me is very important and probably often overlooked just because of the circumstances that it involves. But if you're beneficiary to your insurance, your 401k, your retirement plan, your will, develops a creditor or substance abuse problem, probably a good time to update as well, just because to protect those assets from the creditors, from the substance abuse issues.
Right. Then you're trying to protect that inheritance from the child's own difficulties there. And really, that's going to protect the child because it's protecting them from themselves. And of course, asset protection can be much broader than that, and it doesn't necessarily have to apply to a child who has a drug addiction or other troubles. But certainly, that's a good one.
If your executors, the people you've named as your executors or beneficiaries, they pass away, they're going to have to update your documents to add new people.
Yes.
This is probably something that older clients face.
Yeah, and this is
often
something that you may have in just some routine updating and reviewing of your plan. You know, you do a plan and you go to a lawyer, 8 or 10 years later maybe, and some people, maybe your brother who was an executor has died, or maybe even your spouse has died who was named as executor, and so that's you'll need to update those choices, because if not, you know, there'll be a question as to who's going to be doing that at your death, and most people would prefer to nominate that person themselves.
We're talking the best times to update your wills, your estate plan documents. John Baker, estate planning attorney, is here, BakerCounsel.com. In contrast to what we spoke about moments ago, if your beneficiary has creditor or substance abuse issues, good time to update. But also, if they actually come out and they have improved their financial situation, they've beaten their substance abuse issues, they've became more responsible, that would be a good time to update as well, because you kind of go back to maybe your original plan, or you don't structure things quite the same now that they have aged. I see this would be more appropriate for someone. Maybe my child is not financially responsible until they're 25, 30, 35 years old. Now that they are that age, maybe it's time for me to change how I distribute things.
And there's different ways you can do that, but in general, though, what you may do is give that child more control over their inheritance. Even if you're trying to do asset protection, you may let them be their own trustee. You know, other things you could do.
If legislation passes, that's a good time to update your estate plan documents. And we had some legislation that passed last year that affect retirement plans. And it feels like every year there's some type of change. Hard to stay in tune of what's all going on.
Yeah, so you know, that's a biggie right there. That's probably one that we cite a lot in our meetings, is changes to the tax laws and changes to trust and estate laws. You know, those are always evolving. You know, the law is never stays the same forever, and we certainly know that with taxes. Once we have a permanent tax law, it seems like about 5 years later it gets changed. So you know, it's you always have to be mindful of that. And also, as the laws change and as the tax laws change, lawyer planning techniques evolve and change as well. So the lawyers may be doing some things a little different now than what you may have had 10 years ago.
It would be hard to remember every situation that you need to update your estate planning documents. But a good rule of thumb is just every couple of years, have a visit with your attorney, right? So that way, so they can just kind of go through the general questions so you don't overlook a reason to update.
Yeah, I think that's a great idea, really.
Another reason to update your estate planning documents is you can't find your original documents. And you can't got to have the original will, right? Now, copies won't work.
Well, yeah, so many of us today, we're so accustomed to doing things electronically or by copies. You know, an original document probably to some people is kind of a foreign concept. You know, what exactly is that? I mean, we sign documents electronically, but you know, our will laws in Tennessee, you know, I believe they were enacted, these witnessing and writing requirements and all were, you know, somewhere around World War II, and you know, we barely had typewriters at that time. So, you know, the world has changed, but some of the laws in wills and estates have not changed as much, and there's probably reasons for that. You want to protect from fraud and things like that when it comes to wills, so you do want some formalities to be established, but it is with that will, you know, that original document is important, because it can be a lot harder to probate a copy of a will than an original signed will.
If you have an estate planning question off the air, reach out to John online, BakerCounsel.com, BakerCounsel.com. We're going to take another break. We'll be back right after this and continue our discussion on estate planning. This is Financial Coaching Radio. Would you like your business to be more efficient? Well-organized financial records are the foundation of any successful business. Take an advantage over your competition today by calling Tutherow Hell & Welch CPAs at 848-1072. They can provide you with expert bookkeeping, payroll services, tax planning, and much, much more. Go to thwcpa.com or call them at 848-1072 today. Would you trust your doctor or surgeon if they had never been to medical school? Of course not. So why trust your financial future to a financial advisor with little training or education? Anyone can call themselves a financial planner or a financial advisor.
but a certified financial planner has been extensively trained. My name is Jason Qualls, and I am one of just a few certified financial planners in this area. So ask your current advisor about their education and training. Then call me, Jason Qualls, certified financial planner, at 878-2134, or go to jasonquallscfp.com. Okay, folks, I've said it before, but I'm going to say it again. If you were my client or a loved one, I would never let you get your wills done online. This is truly a case of where you only get what you pay for, and those you leave behind will be the ones to pay the price. Go see estate planning attorney John Baker today by calling 896-5621 or go to bakercounsel.com. Again, that's 896-5621 or bakercounsel.com. Get the expert estate planning advice you need today. Welcome back to the show. This is Financial Coaching Radio, the one place you get the truth about personal finance. No books to sell, certainly not pushing any live event tickets. We'll leave that to the other show. Still joining in is John Baker, estate planning attorney, bakercounsel.com. John, let's talk about what is a probate asset and what is a non-probate asset. People just usually think in terms of assets, but there's different types of way that they're passed on and whether they have to go through the court process. So describe to us a big difference of those two.
Yeah, so a what we refer to as a probate asset is an asset that we can't distribute, can't get the title updated when somebody dies until the court process called probate is established. And through that process, the asset can get retitled or redistributed or, you know, otherwise, you know, transferred, you know, to the beneficiary. And so that would be a probate asset. A non-probate asset would simply be the opposite, any asset that's not going through that court process. So what is that? Could be an asset that's in a trust, an asset that passes by because it's a joint asset, like a joint bank account, or by beneficiary designation, like an insurance contract. So, yeah. And when you're setting up your estate plan, you almost sometimes need a flow chart to see what's going through probate, what's going through beneficiary designation, what's joint account, what's trust, and you may have things flowing different ways, but the goal is to get it all flowing where you want it to go and how you want it to flow.
And avoid court if you can.
Yeah.
Some assets, you know, it just doesn't make a whole lot of sense to avoid court because of those other cost and planning and complexities involved.
That's right. You know, and so, you know, people really should look at that. You know, do we need to have this go through probate, or is there a simpler way to do it?
Would it be, you know, people either don't understand what probate is and they have no negative experience, or people are really on the other side. They just want to avoid probate at all cost. Is that the general view of attorneys, that, you know, the court process should be avoided if you can, or is it just, you know, it's not that big a deal?
You know, it's probably a little bit as kind of varies somewhat from attorney to attorney. I would say yes, most attorneys would say, you know, if you can have a favorable outcome and avoid court, then that's usually the way to go. But, you know, if you're doing a will, and if it's will planning, a will requires probate. You know, to be legally valid to transfer title, the will must be accepted by the probate court. So sometimes people confuse that. They think if you have a will, you don't need probate. Some people think you need probate only if there's no planning, but that's not true. It could be that case, but it also could be the case where there's a will that needs to be probated. The common way that people often will plan to avoid probate is through the use of trusts. And like we were talking about, maybe beneficiary designations like on IRA accounts. And
now, is the probate process always in front of like a judge, or is it more behind the scenes type process? I know it depends on this, but you have a very simple case, maybe, you know, so it has to go to probate, quote unquote, but it's just not significant. Yeah. Is that kind of done behind the scenes?
You know, in Tennessee, it'll vary a little bit. You know, in Rutherford County, we go before the judge in our probate court. In some counties, let's say like Williamson County, the clerk of the court administers that. So unless it's something getting a little more complicated, the clerk and master will typically handle most of the routine matters, and you don't actually go before the judge. So that can vary somewhat from county to county, you know, as to actually how you do it.
John Baker, estate planning attorney online. The website again is bakercounsel.com. John, you have an office right here in Rutherford County. What's the best phone number to reach you?
Yeah, we're here in Murfreesboro, 615-896-5621.
All right, John, I appreciate your help today.
Hey, glad to be here, and it's been a while, but glad to be back, and hopefully we can keep this up.
Keep it locked in right here on Financial Coaching Radio. I'm your host, Jason Qualls, certified financial planner. Back right after this.
Did you know that the U.S. tax code has over 70,000 pages? This is precisely why you must have a tax expert on your team. The folks at TH&W CPAs have been providing their expertise to individuals and businesses in Middle Tennessee for over 50 years. And now they have an office right here in Murfreesboro. Call Kevin Sizemore today with TH&W CPAs at 848-1072. That's 848-1072 or online at thwcpa.com.
Hey, Financial Coaching Radio listeners. If you don't understand exactly how your financial advisor is compensated, you could be in big trouble. My name is Jason Qualls, a commission-free certified financial planner. To learn more about why my process is so unique, go to jasonquallscfp.com or call 878-2134 today.
Donegal offers car and homeowners insurance at rates that are very competitive. So competitive that Donegal's car insurance rates are among the lowest in the state. And if you insure your car and home with Donegal, Donegal will take up to an additional 10% off their already low rates. Donegal, a better value.
Let us quote your auto and home and maximize your discounts. Call Middle Tennessee Insurance Group at 615-898-0053.
Welcome back to the show. This is the one show giving you the truth about personal finance. Got a few more minutes. So, reminding you to listen to the show anytime, anywhere at financialcoachingradio.com. Click on archives, that long list of all the past shows. As you know, we've been talking estate planning today in the last two segments. I want to kind of give you a feedback on some of the options you have with naming beneficiaries. You can name a direct person, or you can name your estate, or if you have a trust, you can name your trust. Most people don't have a trust, so they're going to be naming a direct person. But sometimes that person you want to name is a minor. So sometimes you need to be thinking about who is going to inherit your assets, especially things like life insurance. And is it good for someone as young as that person to get a direct inheritance as via beneficiary? All things to discuss with your financial planner, all things to discuss with your estate planning attorney. For more about me, go to jasonquallscfp.com. That's jasonquallscfp.com. There you'll learn about what I do, how I do it, why my financial planning practice is unique. Because to put it in a direct sense, most financial folks are financial salespeople. And they care more about closing the deal than actually doing what's in your best interest. They'll never tell you that, but I sure will. Go to jasonquallscfp.com for more. All right, I'm going to get out of here for today. But appreciate you listening today and every day. Keep it locked in. There's more local talk coming up right after this.